Boker Tov in the East Coast, so Ryan Tobin, welcome everybody. Welcome to all our regulars, and for those who are new, it's a pleasure to welcome you to Torah in Motion. I'm Jay Kelman, director of Torah in Motion. It's really a pleasure to have you, which I think unfortunately, a very important and timely program that we have. I want to first thank Marsha and Michael Lax, who are sponsoring our program today. Thank you. Good friends of ours in Toronto, longtime friends and supporters of Torah in Motion, so we thank you. I want to thank, of course, Debbie Ackerman also, who put together a lot of the program together with Ilana, my wife Ilana. They really worked on the program itself, so thank you for all that, and thank you for coming, and thank you to all our speakers. And with that, we'll introduce very briefly Dr. Bram Dani Bram, who is the founding director of METI, the Israel Psychotrauma Center, and it's a pleasure to welcome him back to Torah in Motion. Bakasha, Dr. Bram.
Thank you very much. Good morning. It is the second day of Adar Aleph, and we very much feel that it's not Adar Beit, and we hope that Adar Beit will be better than Adar Aleph. And it's a pleasure to be here. I will use a presentation so that I remember what I'm talking about. So basically, I'm an old-timer in the field of trauma and resilience, starting from 1979 and from 1988 in Israel. And so I would like to share a bit of where we are. I would like to first start with the idea that, you know, everyone is nowadays talking about trauma, but basically we are talking about survival responses. We are not past, we are still in the middle of a war and in the middle of a lot of grief. And so we have to understand that if we want to get into this field and thinking about what actually is happening to us. And what's happening to us is a very broad us. It is we of the Jewish people, not only in Israel, but also everywhere in the world, because we know what is happening in so many different places. So I want to say something about the consequences of traumatic events on the individual and maybe on the community, and share some thoughts about where we are in Israel after October 7th. So that is a very difficult question of what happened to us on October 7th, when at 8:20, at least in Jerusalem, the sirens went off just on the way to Simchat Torah. And so the first thing you do is you get into your safe room, you go back home, you go to get into your safe room and wait for what's happening. So for me, what is important is I nowadays speak much less about trauma and much more about survival responses. And in our survival responses, when you feel existential threat, then we have this inborn threat detection system, which is very physical. When something frightens you, you feel it in the body. And then you have to make out what is safe and what is dangerous. And that comes from the gut. It doesn't come from thinking about it. It doesn't come from feeling about it. It is in the body and it's very effective. So when you hear the siren, you just know what to do. And no one has to teach us what to do. The other thing is that when we are in survival response, we bond in a very different way than in any other situation. We bond with whoever is near to us, meaning that even if there is an abuser near to us and he is getting us into survival mode, we bond with that person. We bond with whoever is near to us. And the third thing we need to know is that learning in survival response is very different than it is when we try to learn something, when we try to get some skill in. Now we have to do it again and again and again. No, in survival response, things get imprinted in us in a very strong way and sometimes very difficult to get it out of the way. So we really need to understand that in order to get to think about what happens to us and how do we basically get out of survival mode of our survival responses. We get into survival mode in an automatic way. We don't have to think, we don't have to learn. It happens to us more or less. We can shape that response a bit. That is what the army does when it teaches our kids to go towards the danger and not away from it. But mostly it is a response from the gut. And the question basically for all of us is, how do you get out of survival mode? And because that is not automatic. There's no advantage, basically, or no survival value in getting out of survival mode. So the question we need to ask is, what are the conditions for getting out of survival mode? Because that is what we actually want to do and help each other not stay in survival mode all the time, because that has quite a price we have to pay. So how do we do that? We get out of survival mode by processing our experience. And processing means that we are re-experiencing, we are looking again at what happened to us. And if we get overwhelmed, we try to avoid it in order to calm ourselves down. The compass for that process of that pendulum between re-experiencing and an avoidance is how aroused we are, how many distress we feel, how much distress we feel. The goal of that process is creating a narrative of what and why all of this happened. And this is a process that, of course, we are still only at the beginning of in our current situation. So re-experiencing means that you suddenly think about it, suddenly the images come back, suddenly the smells come back, suddenly you feel overwhelmed with feelings, with dreams or nightmares. You're preoccupied with what happened. Now, again, people might be confused and think, oh, this is post-traumatic stress disorder. No, this is the normal response that people have after a traumatic event, after getting in survival mode. So then in an automatic way, again, our system says, hey, you still have to process this. What does all of this mean? And when we get overwhelmed, we try to avoid it because it is too overwhelming. So we try not to speak, not to think about it. We avoid places, people. We feel numb. All of these things that get us away from this overwhelm. And what basically leads that is the symptoms of hyperarousal. When you get too tense, you go more towards avoidance. When you feel better and okay and try to sleep, then suddenly the things come up again. And this is a natural process which the body basically leads us to do. And if we don't do it, I mean, cognitive changes, when you get, when you think, even when we had on Simchat Torah, when you are overwhelmed by this, then suddenly, first of all, you feel we're not safe. we actually felt very frightened to get out of the house. Where, what, is it okay to be on the street? Is it okay to trust someone you see walking past? So this is the reason we need to process, because you don't want to stay with that kind of ideas. Now, what we need to know, and I think that is very important, we did, after the war in 2006, we did a lot of work in schools up north, and we also looked at how are the adolescents doing. And what we found is about 7.5% have symptoms of PTSD, another 4.5% have post-traumatic stress disorder, severe symptoms, but also depression, and another 6.5% are depressed. But see, that together basically says 17.9% are in psychopathology that needs maybe treatment. It means that the far majority does not basically show symptoms of pathology, meaning people cope with it, and there is a lot of, we can call it resilience. Now we can call it the koiches to cope with all of this. And at this moment, there seems to be a sort of confusion of having some symptoms, and then people immediately think, oh, I am developing post-traumatic stress disorder. I need treatment. That is at this moment in Israel, everyone talks about treatment, and the question is that a good idea, or might that even do damage? So we have to really think about all of this, because post-traumatic phenomena are on a continuum from having no symptoms or some symptoms to more severe symptoms to full-fledged post-traumatic stress disorder. And basically, full-fledged post-traumatic stress disorder is when people stay in survival mode, even though the situation doesn't necessitate it. So we're still not 100% sure what the difference is qualitatively between some post-traumatic symptoms and post-traumatic stress disorder. Is that really a very different entity? But we do know that the majority of people are somewhere on the continuum, and only a small minority develops post-traumatic stress disorder, even in such extreme circumstances as we are witnessing in the people kidnapped in Gaza. Because I've worked a lot with Holocaust survivors, and even there, we know that the majority is coping reasonably well. It doesn't mean there's no suffering, but it means people can cope and build productive lives and have families. So there's no, only minority even there developed post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, we also have to know, and that's a general, maybe good to know for you, there is no difference in the effectivity of all kinds of therapy models for post-traumatic stress disorder. So for those who need it, there's a variety of models available. And when you look at research, there's not a lot of difference, although every therapy model says we are the only ones who really know what to do. But we know that that is not really true. They all do about the same. But trauma treatment at this moment in Israel has become almost too popular. And that is a problem. When people get the message you need treatment, they start to look at themselves and ask themselves, oh, if I have a nightmare because I have a son who fights in Gaza, is there something wrong with me? Or is this a very natural response to a very threatening situation? So we need to moderate ourselves and regulate ourselves to think about what actually is needed in this situation. Now, what has happened to us on the 7th of October? That something really, really strong has happened to us. First of all, the surprise. We were totally surprised. The destruction, the feeling of defeat and humiliation. We have the Israeli army. We thought we are safe. But what happened? How do we build such an image again of we are okay? And no one knew what this means. Suddenly we were at loss for the meaning of this, and we really felt helpless. And to a large degree, people still feel helpless. People actually occupied a part of Israel. No occupied territories of Israel itself. Parts of that were occupied. So the feeling of helplessness with a lot of associations to Holocaust, associations to, is this the country we can live in? An enormous damage. And also the scope and severity of the damage, both in civilians, houses that were burned, people who were just murdered, and the military. That is something we don't really know from before. And then there is the wide circles of vulnerability. We all know, all Israelis know, either someone was kidnapped or who was killed or who has a kid fighting in Gaza, or just in the past week, two young people from our neighborhood fighting in Gaza were killed. So we are all in grief. Some people say even more grief than trauma. It is this enormous heaviness that is now present in Israeli society, which is not the way probably you know Israel, with its vibrant energy. At this moment, there's a lot of everyone is involved with this. And then the breach of we were always proud to have our army that will protect us in whatever situation. And now the sense of security is really breached, and we don't feel safe. And also wars in Israel have always been short. Some very short, some, but this is a very long war, and we're not seeing the end of it. So these are all issues that make this a massive, traumatic situation. And there is no overall view of the meaning of all of this and what will the consequences be. So, looking at all of this together, we have to admit that this is very different. It is very different from what we've had before. And I am in Israel only for the past 35, almost 36 years, and have gone through wars here, but this is very different. And that together with what is happening in the diaspora. So we are very disturbed by this whole, yeah, we don't even know how to find words for it. And that is the question, how are we going to make sense of this? And to make it even clearer, this is a picture that is now hanging where the festival was in Re'im down south. And these are the 364 young people that were killed there. And it's just, when you look at this, it's just overwhelming. And it's really, we don't even know what to say about that. If you look at this picture, you just think, oh, that's a party. And these people were all brutally killed. And we have to find a meaning for this. How do we look at this and stay regulated and process this? We're far from that at this moment. And at the same time, the combat soldiers, many of you have heard about our Peace of Mind program that Meitiv, the Israel Psychotrauma Center in Jerusalem, has developed since 2007. And Jewish communities have hosted groups of Peace of Mind, groups of combat soldiers that come and do a week of processing, very intensive processing, while being in a safe bubble in a Jewish community wherever in the world. Many in Toronto, many in London, many in the New York and Florida area, many also in California. And now the Ministry of Defense is saying we need services for 125,000 soldiers, reserve soldiers, and that is not even including the soldiers who are in their compulsory service between the ages of 18 and 21. So the massive needs there are now to just help with processing. We started to actually do workshops, 2-day workshops for soldiers between them coming out of Gaza and going home. And to be honest, I thought it would be impossible to do that because, you just want them to go home and feel okay. But the guys themselves and the girls, all the soldiers asked for it, and they said, we're not ready to go home because as someone in my shul said, who came home and who didn't have any transition program, says, I don't know what reality is. Is reality home or is reality Gaza? It just doesn't fit together. I can't put it together. And that disconnect is a tremendous problem for all those trying to adapt to what some people call normal life. And so all these reserves, they now come out, but they know that in 4 to 8 weeks, they will have to go in again, either in Gaza or up north, depending on what will happen in politics and in the war itself. So that is a tremendous pressure. And then you ask yourself, so how can you go back to relax? How can you lean back and think about the meaning of all of this? So there's many, many questions that are with us. Thinking about this, together with colleagues here in Israel, we know that this is different than individual trauma. This is very different from thinking about who needs therapy. Of course, we have the services of Meitiv and of many other organizations that try to cope with the enormous inflow of soldiers or other people who need treatment. We're trying to do that. But at the same time, we know there will never be enough therapists to service everyone. So one has to think really different. So one of the things to understand is that we're still in survival responses. And that is not pathology. That is healthy adaptation. And so many people talk about post-traumatic stress disorder. Well, we are still in the war. We're in the middle of the war. So basically, we're not post. We are in there. And not everyone needs therapy. We need to find ways to hold each other. And that has become a major question for the two colleagues and me, that we've come together and are thinking about how do we go about this. And I think that probably the same is true for communities in the diaspora. How do we hold each other? How do we create forums for helping each other calm down? And the thing that is most helpful for people in calming down is be together. And even more for those shuls where singing is important, singing together is one enormous important thing of how you hold each other. Being part of a bigger whole, being part of a community. Now, individual resilience is teachable. We've done a lot of work on that in schools, in the educational system in Israel, in early childhood, and also in first responders units. You want to teach how to regulate your emotions. What makes you more tense? What makes you more relaxed? How can you basically trust your body, that if you feel somewhat out of breath, even when you haven't done any sports, but you feel some anxiety, how can you accept that and let the body take care of that? Because the body will. And there are many ways of emotion regulation that can be taught. But at this moment, what seems to be even more important is community resilience. And community resilience, like personal individual resilience, is teachable. It can be taught. It is not something we have or not have. It is something that can be worked on. So in our thoughts, we are starting to think about comprehensive programs for whole communities. How do you work with children in the schools? How do you work with communities? How do you work with youth movements? How do you help even small businesses in Israel to maintain their resilience? They need to know what that is, right? Because we know that even in that field of business development, when you are afraid that everything will go wrong, the chances that things do go wrong are higher. So we are going to work also with small businesses and see how to support them, besides also bringing in financial resources to be able to maintain them. So these are very comprehensive programs that we are now in the process of setting up. But what I basically am telling you is that we're going through an enormous change in Israeli society, something that we haven't experienced before, although we know that in previous wars and in disasters that we have gone through and that other nations have gone through, the majority will not develop psychopathology. But we know also that the amount of people volunteering now, finding the strength to give to others, to help each other, is something that is tremendously strong. We've seen that after 9/11, when people started to volunteer in the whole world. And we know that after disasters. So we have to harness that. And that means very specific programs that are not necessarily individual therapy. So I want to thank you for listening to this. I'll be happy to think if you have any questions. And I'm also looking at that sentence, which we know from Hatikva, and when we sing Od lo avda tikvateinu. And that is not such an easy sentence, which we know it's the hope from our 2000 years. But what does it mean when we say Od lo avda tikvateinu? We don't really realize that, but there is something like that, that apparently hope can be lost, and we will have to work hard to maintain that together. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Okay, we have a couple minutes for questions if anybody either to type in the chat box, if anyone wants to unmute themselves and ask, feel free to do so. Okay, anybody? I see Dr. Brahm, I think there is a comment in the chat box. I'm just seeing it now. If you want to take a look.
Yeah.
About EMDR.
So, yeah, there is EMDR therapy that has been shown to be the most effective treatment for the kinds of trouble people experienced. You know, the same thing you will hear from the people inventing other kinds of treatments. We are the best treatment. There's no other one. That has been my field since the early 1980s, looking at different treatment methods and their effectivity. And of course, I know that we all want to be the best, and that is wonderful. But in reality, the treatment methods give about the same effectivity.
May I speak to what you're saying?
Sure.
So there are 86 Beeri survivors that were treated in one session each of EMDR by four EMDR therapists. And in one session, they went from a distress level of 10 over 10 to 0 to 3, including a woman who was catatonic. When they used these techniques with people who survived the attacks in the kibbutzim, and they've used the RTEP or the EMDR with soldiers, they have very effective and very efficient results. And nobody else is getting these kinds of results. The effectivity of EMDR across the world has been shown to be 80 to 90% in five sessions or less. It is very effective and very efficient for most people for whom it's appropriate, but no treatment, none, is effective for everybody. But as a way of going to help people, it's the best thing to use as the first approximation. And if it doesn't work, to try something else.
Well, you're speaking to the wrong person because I know that that literature very well. And yes, it is true. It's an effective treatment, but with these early interventions, there has been no comparison with other methods. There has been a comparison with not doing anything. Believe me, I'm totally in favor of EMDR, but I'm not more in favor of that than, you know, for with somatic experiencing, who has emotion aid as a first response. There are many methods, and we should all be informed and use those methods. But the idea that one will do everything the best, it's just not an evidence-based statement. But I'm all in favor of using the protocols that exist. But again, also, if you talk about 85 people from whatever community, the question is, do they all need that? Or are we doing it, you know, just to everyone we see? That's a big question. Now, we
these
might
were people.
Over-treat.
These were people who came of their own volition to try to get help,
sure.
And after they saw the results, they advocated it to their friends. It
yeah.
wasn't something that was applied to people, you know, in a blanket way.
Well, so that is one of the problems at this moment in Israel, that everyone says everyone needs treatment, go for treatment, otherwise you will develop post-traumatic stress disorder. And that has become sort of a frenzy, I call it, which itself is not a healthy message to give out.
But
it is
I think
a message
the experience
that basically,
of these people is that they weren't sleeping at night. They were having nightmares. They were having anxiety that didn't stop. They weren't functioning, and they were so relieved in just one session to be able to feel like human beings again and to put a lot of the symptoms behind them.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Rabbi Peres, really, Dr. Braum, thank you very much for really a fascinating presentation. And of course, all of these sessions, you know, this is just to sort of open up our discussion. And I want to thank you. And hopefully there'll be opportunity to follow up and, you know, other opportunities. But thank you very much, Rabbi.